This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, he's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll give away some tickets coming up for the Charleston Battery and their match Friday night, which is almost sold out. You can get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com. But stay tuned. We'll be giving away some tickets a little bit later on. Plus, a big win in NHL last night for the show. That's right. We'll talk a little more hockey because it has a level of importance to the Morrow Midday Show. And we also have to talk about some baseball radio play-by-play. We got a lot to do over the next couple of hours. We talk golf at this time every week as well. We have plenty to do there with our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, who joins us at this time every Wednesday. Find him on Twitter, at Jay Schill. He writes for PGA Magazine. And he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
I am well, sir. How are you today? And did I hear that correctly, that there's something that there's a hockey-baseball play-by-play connection?
Well, two separate things. But, yeah, oh, both okay. Things we got to get to coming up, yeah.
Yeah, look, folks, Luke's plate is filled. A lot going on, a lot of moving pieces, which is why I'm always appreciative that he finds time for me.
Hey, likewise, because there's a lot going on in the golf world that we need you to break down for us. So let's start.
Yeah.
With, of course, the biggest name, Tiger Woods, who's been traveling all around, it seems, these last couple of weeks. He was in Tulsa. He's getting ready for the PGA Championship. He's out in Vegas. What's going on with Tiger? Could we see him tee it up in 2 weeks?
So, literally, 5 minutes before Trent called me to do this, I was recording a podcast with Scott Van Pelt. This is not self-promotion. Trust me, folks. This has to do with what I'm talking about. Teeing It Up is the name of the podcast. That'll be out later today. Anyway, I said, I basically said that it caused a frenzy when he came into Tulsa last week. His plane was tracked. There were helicopters tracking him for six holes, people in bushes. I mean, one of the workers at Southern Hills said it was like the Beatles had shown up, which is just bizarre to think about. And I did not expect a scouting trip 3 weeks out. I personally did not see that coming. It makes sense when you look at what he was doing, which is that he was trying to get to Vegas. He was getting to Vegas because he had his big charity event, that's the Tiger Jam, out there in Vegas last weekend. So, and then when he's in Vegas, he usually holds a clinic. And this year for the clinic, there was a question mark of what would Tiger do? Does he feel comfortable holding a clinic? Or would he have somebody else come in and do it for him? And he had Colin Morikawa come in, and yet Tiger hit more balls. So here we are just, I think it was something like 19 days after Sunday at Augusta. He's practicing in Tulsa, and then he's turning around 3-4 days later and, hitting balls and putting some speed behind it, too, in Vegas for his charity event. So this is kind of all of where this kind of puts us from a storyline perspective into what Scott said. And what SVP basically said is, and remember, folks, he's known Tiger for 25 years, been friends with him for 25 years. I can't see Tiger going to Tulsa to check out a golf course that I'll be watching on TV that the pros will be playing.
So
I can't see myself just going there to scout on behalf of players or scout for fun for my watching experience. And it's a great point. And I think that we're going to see Tiger in 2 weeks. 15 days from now is when the PGA starts. It's astounding. But Under promise, over deliver has been the name of the game for Team Tiger from the beginning on this, and I think this is yet another example of it.
That's almost like a callback. I forgot that. I was trying to think of that phrase Monday on the show, and I couldn't come up with the first part for some reason. So that was well done. Not only do you drop the podcast with Scott Van Pelt, but you deliver a callback to the Morrow Midday Show from Monday. So that's how big of a professional you are.
There you go.
Yeah. Mexico Open was going on. Of course, we'll keep an eye out on Tiger. Jeremy will continue to update us here as we get closer. But this past weekend, we had the Mexico Open, and Jon Rahm was the leader, wire to wire, which I'm sure is very hard to do in a four-day golf tournament. What stood out about Rahm's performance this past weekend?
Do you realize that we've had three wire-to-wire winners, Joaquin Niemann, Cantlay, and Schauffele in the team event, and now Rahm here? He drove the ball on a string. And as you said, wire-to-wire is really hard, and you have to be able to withstand a lot. And his putter, which had been letting him down and letting him down and letting him down, finally cooperated a little bit, and he just drove it so accurately, that little baby fade. And if you want a confidence booster leading into the second major of the year, this is it. I mean, this is all you can ask for. Windy conditions down there. And yes, folks, the field was weak. But still, doing it four straight days is not easy. And to be able to do that four straight days is really impressive. And the other part about this, Luke, that cannot get overlooked, is this is somebody that was aggravated with the media. And Jon Rahm is one of the best with the media that there is, but he was aggravated, not that they had messed up, but just there was another of, when are you going to get back in the winner's circle type deals? And he was tired of asking the same bleeping question over and over again, right? And we've been there. You've been there in those locker rooms. If a pitcher's not getting it done, you have to ask the question of why, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that's the exact same thing that happened here. And I'm telling you, there's a stat coming down the line called strokes gained left to right putts. If Jon Rahm is not the leader in that category, then something is flawed with the way that the stat is being calculated. You give him a left to right putt clutch like on 14 on Sunday, he's going to make it. He's the best left to right putter, which for right-handers is the hardest vantage point to putt from. It's insane. And kudos to him. Congrats to him and to him and the family. And he has a second kid on the way, and it's just a ton of blessings in Jon Rahm's world. And that's another one.
Yeah, I would say so. Rahm sounds like Derek Zoolander, right? He can't go left, but if he goes right, he's fantastic. Well, I don't know if he can't go left. Derek Zoolander could. Anyways, Tony Finau had a great surge on Sunday, was 8-under on Sunday, got within a stroke of Jon Rahm. Do you think that surge, what we saw Sunday from Tony, could be a sign of bigger things to come?
When was the last time you heard me say this? Tony Finau's last top 10 before Sunday was his win last August. It's been a while for Tony Finau. And yes, he had the Ryder Cup, but still, it had been a while for him to poke his head back up there. And sometimes chasing can unlock a freedom, and he had that. Kudos to Brandon Wu and Kurt Kitayama. Those are big FedEx Cup point performances for those guys. But for Tony Finau, don't be surprised if he gets another high finish soon and cites this as a springboard. And by the way, for Rahm, that's also his first win since his U.S. Open win last year, last June. So he had a drought going as well, which is part of the reason why the media was asking all those questions. So kudos to all of those folks, but watch out for Tony Finau. I think this could be the start of something, especially if his putter stays hot.
Talking with Jeremy Schilling, as we do every Wednesday, our resident golf expert. I want to get your thoughts on this clip from Lydia Ko that has become a viral answer. We'll play the audio first, then we'll get Jeremy's take on it. But here is Lydia talking about, well, I guess her time of the month. Here is Lydia Ko. Let's play the audio first, and then we'll get Jeremy's take.
Come out and give you a little physical therapy.
Nope.
Come out and give you a little physical therapy.
No, it's not. That's weird. All right, we're having a problem with the audio. That's odd. It keeps getting cut off there.
Chris Wicker to come out and give you a little physical therapy as well. Is that a concern moving forward?
I hope not. It's that time of the month, I know the ladies watching are probably like, yeah, I got you. So when that happens, my back gets really tight and I'm all twisted, and it's not the first time that Chris has seen me twisted, but it felt a lot better after he came. So yeah, there you go.
thanks.
I know you're lost for words, Jerry. Honesty it is.
That was Lydia Ko. We got there eventually. Third time's a charm. Audio finally played. And I know Jerry afterwards, who was doing the interview, said she just caught me off guard. It was a priceless moment. This is something that's gone viral. As she talked about the time of the month. Jeremy, from this viral moment, what stood out to you about Lydia's honesty, talking about what she was dealing with?
It is insane. It's awesome to see this. I've been watching golf for 26 years. I remember, moments from telecasts for probably the last 21, 22. When was the last time you heard a women's sports telecast talk about the impacts of their period on their performance and what aches them?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I ever have, but obviously it should be discussed.
It is so refreshing, because for golfers, especially female golfers, they live in this world that the men can't relate to, obviously. And people always say, well, I thought you were going to play better. I thought you were going to play better. And they can get locked into sports mode and forget about life mode. And for Lydia Ko, who's one of the best in the world, and all Jerry Foltz from Golf Channel was doing was a question that gets asked all the time in golf, which is, you had a physio come out to work on your back on the back nine. That is a problem. If that is a regular thing, not this, but if this is a regular thing, this is a major problem and you need to ask about it. It's newsworthy. Does this person have a back issue? Happens all the time in golf. It's completely normal. For Lydia to go there, though, I think is going to give a lot of women freedom to talk about things like this, because one of the things that has frustrated many a group, whether it's women's college basketball, the WNBA, women's tennis, women's golf, is that they don't feel themselves they don't feel the representation when it comes to these moments that used to be taboo. Like, literally, Luke, would you let this on the air like 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
I mean, I probably would, but I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's different now than it was a couple years ago.
Yeah, and this is a freedom, and the clip has gone viral not only for how Lydia handled it and Jerry's reaction, but also the fact, and this is the most important thing, it has come from a lot of women who are like, hallelujah, somebody is finally speaking to what we go through. And then people ask why, we can't hit the shot or can't, or, seem to not be playing well. Then suddenly we start playing better, 2 weeks later. Could just be that it's their time of the month.
Right, yeah. Hey, look, it's the truth. Might as well be open about it. Talk about it openly like Lydia did, which, as you said, could open the door for others to be able to do the same now moving forward. As we talk with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert, not only is Tiger Woods' watch on, but also Phil Mickelson. And he was at a California golf course. So what's the latest on Phil? Are we getting towards some sort of return for Mickelson? What's the latest there? What's next for him?
So I believe last week we talked about how he had entered the U.S. Open, entered the PGA Championship, and entered the first of the Live Golf Invitational Series events, but his manager had said this is all just, procedural and don't read anything into it. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we were last week.
Yeah.
This past week, he was spotted at his home course in Los Angeles, San Diego, excuse me. So it shows that he's returned to the golf course and that he's back in his home. This is noteworthy because he has gone completely off the grid, and some people, not that they were concerned about his safety, but it's like, not only can we not tell you when Phil's playing, we can't tell you where Phil is, period. So the bottom line here to me is Phil is enjoying playing golf. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
That's a good start. And we'll see where this takes us. But I don't know, to be honest with you, Luke, if we're going to see him in 2 weeks, just because at this age, 51, you would think he'd want some reps under him, and he's not scheduled to have any reps. This is different than Tiger, who's going to have to play only big events going forward. Phil can play whenever he wants. And then there's the question of, is he still suspended? This is a ramp up, clearly, for the U.S. Open, one would think, in the Open. Did Phil enter the PGA Championship for procedural reasons, and did the PGA of America confirm it? Because the suspension, non-suspension is a PGA Tour suspension, non-suspension, and not the PGA of America's, so that they can let him into the event, and then he can withdraw himself if they are honoring the suspension. I don't know if that makes sense to people, but we still don't know what the status is of the suspension, nor if the PGA of America would honor said suspension. So there's a lot of unknowns, but I would not put money on Phil Mickelson playing or winning this PGA.
All right. Interesting. We'll continue to track that as well. Before we let you go, as we talk with Jeremy Schilling, we got the Wells Fargo Championship this weekend. They have changed venues. What should we expect this weekend? Who do you like?
This is a one-a-year vendor change. They changed their vendors, Luke. No, this is a one-year venue change from Charlotte to the D.C. area solely because of the President's Cup, which will be coming to Quail Hollow in Charlotte, which normally hosts this event. So with them needing to save that golf course, we are hanging out in D.C. this week, and I don't really know what to think, because this golf course, we haven't seen it in 4 years, since 2018, when I hosted Tiger's event, which was won by Francesco Molinari. So, you know, Rory's the defending champion, but I don't look at him as the defending champion. And I don't really know how to read this. So if you want to take a flyer on somebody like a, Cam Young, go for it. This could be the week to take a flyer. If you are somebody who is in a survivor league like yours truly, and you're trying to figure out when to, how to save people and when to use people, maybe this is the week you use Keegan Bradley. And get some nice money that way. So not quite sure how to play this week. I think the winner of the event ultimately is Matt Fitzpatrick, but he's been used in my leagues, so I can't go there. But somebody who drives it straight is going to be the winner, and Matt Fitzpatrick fits that description. But this is such an unknown that I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, we'll see what happens. We'll find out along with you this weekend. Always makes it more fun anyways, as we talk golf with Jeremy Schilling. Before we let you go, in about 30 seconds, scale of 1 to 10, how excited were you about the Jets, your New York Jets draft this past weekend?
Are you sitting down?
I am.
I was not around, so I only just saw the picks and saw people's thoughts, so I don't have any thoughts.
Oh. All right, well. You know, we had a Jets fan call.
I was off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
So do I think they made nice picks and nice players? Yes, but I didn't do any scouting of who they picked, because I knew I wasn't going to be around for it.
Yeah, right. Well, we had a Jets fan call the other day and said, don't jinx it. Stop talking about how good of a draft it was for the Jets. You're going to jinx it for us. So I guess this is this is good for you.
Let's just speak some truth here. The Jets have been very good at winning April and May and March. They have been atrocious at winning in the fall. So I'm with that caller. Please be nice to us, Luke.
I was very nice. You guys had a great weekend. We'll see what it means
yes,
come fall.
Yes, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No. Well, maybe it will. Maybe this time it will. We'll see. Maybe this time it'll be different for once after all these years. But at least if
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
At least if you were a Jets fan, a Lions fan, a Giants fan, you had something to cheer about this past weekend. We'll see how things play out. He's Jeremy Schilling.
If you think the Lions made good picks, I think the Giants did. I think the Jets did. I have no idea about the Lions.
Yeah. There are other ones I thought had a good weekend. We'll see. You never know. It's hard to judge right now. A couple, a week removed. We'll get back to you in 4 years and see. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter, @JSchill. Our resident golf expert joins us every Wednesday, writes for PGA Magazine, and has his latest podcast coming out with SVP later on. Check it out. Jeremy, appreciate the time as always, and we'll catch up with you next week.
First place New York Yankees.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, that's where we let you go. So we'll talk to you next week. Get the Yankees out of here. You know, Lydia Ko, by the way, that moment's gone viral. I am all for, I'm an open book. Let's not be afraid. You know, mental health should be talked about openly. You want to talk about your time of the month if you're a female athlete, no problem. Let's remove the shame in a lot of this stuff. I have no problem. I've repeated the story many times here on the air. The first CD I ever bought was Cisco because of the thong song. All right, so I have no problem. We're an open book around here. I don't care. I'll tell you anything from my life. In fact, you know, people say, I wish you didn't say all that. I don't care. Sorry if I embarrass you. That's why I usually don't use names. I'll tell you anything. So I'm all for athletes, you know, being open and speaking honestly. Like Ryan Tannehill had his press conference. The big takeaway was that he said he doesn't want to mentor the Malik Willis, the rookie quarterback. But what he also said in that press conference, which isn't getting as much attention, is that, you know, he had to go to therapy after the season. And he was in a dark place, and it took a few weeks to kind of get him out of that after the playoff loss where he threw three interceptions. And, I think this stuff's good that we're talking about going to talk to somebody, therapy, and talking about the mental health of these athletes. A.J. Brown, who was just traded, said something similar during the season. I think it's good. Let's be more open about mental health and about, women, what you go through every month. If it affects your play out there, I don't need all the details. But look, if you're a golfer with a back issue or wondering what's going on, I'll just say what it is. No big deal. It happens. It's part of life. I'll tell you about the thong song. I love that song. Bought that CD. Petey Pablo was another one of the for Raise Up. Bought a CD with Raise Up, six versions of one song because I loved that song so much as a kid. Who cares? No shame. Let's be open about all this stuff. It's not that big of a deal. Anyways, come on up. We'll play a game of fair, foul, or caught. We have to talk some baseball play-by-play. We'll do it next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Send it off in a letter to yourself. Ricky, don't lose that number. It's the only one you own. You might use it if you feel better. When you
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling breaking down everything going on in the golf world. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. You know, he had to bring up those damn Yankees in first place playing great baseball. Now, don't forget, I will say this, as a Red Sox fan who's really ticked off right now, the Yankees last year had a 12-game winning streak later on in the season and then followed up by losing 10 of their next 12. So, yeah, right now they've won whatever it is, 10 in a row, and they're in first place, and they're playing great baseball. But it's a long year. Braves fans know that after last season. You know, last season for Braves fans could be almost like the ultimate curse in the sense of now you always have this belief. Maybe it's a good thing, right? But when the team starts slow, it's like, that's okay. Right? No sense of urgency anymore. That's okay. We were under 500 till August last year. We'll turn it around. And no matter how bad things are going, you'll always expect, you know, better results. And maybe not accept, maybe this team's just not that great. But this right now, it's too early in the season to make any sort of determinations on my Red Sox, on the Braves, on any of these teams. And we're not even a month. The season started late this year, so we're not even a month in. Now, speaking of baseball, we talked about it yesterday in the show. Of course, then they broke it all down on Fan Talk. I thought the Charleston River Dogs did a great thing. Bobby was out there. Trent was out there in person. Yesterday was a great event. We talked about it on air yesterday. They had the kids from North Charleston who were playing Little League Baseball when that terrible thing happened last week with the gunfire breaking out in the parking lot. They had them come out and play yesterday at Joe Riley Park before the River Dogs played. And if you were listening to the station yesterday during that time at 5 p.m., you would hear the play-by-play right here on this station as part of Fan Talk with Trent and Bobby. So, Trent, since you were out there in person, number one, how was it? How did things go yesterday with the River Dogs having those kids come and play?
It was unbelievable to see. You know, they didn't shorten the bases or anything, so the kids were running the full diamond. They had the little plastic mound out there for them. But it was a great crowd, Luke, and the River Dogs people are so nice. You saw the River Dogs players out there and some players from the other team out there kind of interacting with the players. At one point, one of the players walked up to the pitcher, gave him some advice, you know, walked back. the video, Jackie Bradley Jr. Yep. talking to the kids. It was such a cool event to see these kids who obviously went through a ton over the last couple weeks, and to, you know, have this memory instilled in them forever that they got to play at the Joe is pretty cool. It was cool to be a part of.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think it was a great thing what the River Dogs did. And they, as Trent mentioned, JBJ was involved. I guess afterwards the players got to Zoom, the Little Leaguers got to Zoom with like some big leaguers of the Tampa Bay Rays, the parent club of the River Dogs. So just really cool. Because, you know, unfortunately, a moment like that happens, it could turn you away from baseball for life. You never want to get back out there. So to make it fun again yesterday, to show these kids, like, you know, baseball can be fun. Don't worry about what's going on with the gang members in the parking lot. Because, you know, I'm a big baseball guy. I would hate for anybody to be turned away from a sport early on because of an experience like that, let alone just going through that experience. That's the most important part. No kid should have to worry about gunfire as they're playing a Little League game. But then the residual effects, I wouldn't want any kid to then turn away from a sport because of such a scarring experience. So the River Dogs yesterday, you know, made it fun again. And that was a great moment. Now, you guys did the play-by-play,
mm-hmm.
and you were out there in person to be able to help with the broadcast. So how did the actual broadcasting of the game go yesterday, heard right here on ESPN Radio?
I think it went all right, Luke. You know, we were kind of going in a little blind, right? We didn't know the rules, you know, if they were going to do three outs, or they ended up just letting every kid go up to bat, you know, and then they would switch the inning. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then, you know, some of the rosters didn't have last names, and the yep. names were wrong, things of that nature. So we were just playing it by ear. I think it was a good time. I told Bobby before that I was bringing the juice, and hopefully, you know, some of the parents that weren't able to get there were able to listen to it on the radio
yeah.
and hear their kids' names, you know, be called out. I tell you what, there's some prospects for the North Charleston Royals and the North Charleston Angels. They got some guys and gals out there.
That's right. Here's little Billy. His favorite snack is M&M's.
There was three birthdays on the Angels.
Wow.
Three of them. So there was a lot awesome. Of birthday boys out there.
Well, then that's the perfect way to celebrate yesterday, being out there at Joe Riley Park. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the audio to hear how it sounded. Because unfortunately, I did not catch it live. But that was great that you guys were out there. Now, after going through that experience, I feel like you are the perfect person to play. Let's play a little game here. We're going to call it fair, foul, or caught. Because speaking of baseball play-by-play, you may have listened yesterday and heard Trent and Bobby. And look, they always say in broadcasting, like most industries, coaching is the same thing. I've talked to coaches about this. The higher you go, actually the easier it gets. So if you're doing play-by-play of a Little League game, you got nothing to work with. By the time you get to the big leagues, you would think, wow, that's a much tougher job. It's actually a lot easier. You got a statistician next to you, and you got all sorts of information. You meet with the managers beforehand, and you know the guys. Right? It's a lot easier the higher you go. So my point being, after Trent and Bobby did that yesterday, doing a little play-by-play of Little League, now let's jump to the big leagues, where it's supposed to be a lot easier. And our good friend John Sterling, radio broadcaster of the Yankees. Let's play this first clip, and then Trent, you're going to have to answer what you think happens in this play. Is it going to be fair, foul, or caught? So let's first set it up and hear the beginning of this clip from John Sterling.
Pitch is swung on and popped him up to shallow right.
Okay, so that's it. That's okay. The clip. Now you tell me, before we play the rest of the clip, shallow pop up to shallow right. Is this ball going to be fair, foul, or caught?
Ooh, no, I'm gonna say foul. I'm going to say foul, okay?
All right.
I think I'm going to go with foul. Knowing John Sterling, I think I'm going to say foul here, Luke.
All right, play that second clip. Let's hear what happens with the rest of this play.
Pitch is swung on and popped him up to shallow right, and the ball lands fair, foul, and it's caught.
Oh, he
there
got
it
all
is.
Three.
There it is.
It was fair, then it was foul, and then it was caught. So I guess regardless of what you said, you were correct, because apparently on that play, all three things happened.
Everything was happening at the same time.
That's
good
right.
for John Sterling. He's painting a picture.
That's
painting
right.
a picture.
I mean, technically, he could be right, right? First, the ball was fair, then it moved into foul ground, and then it actually was caught in foul territory. I don't know what actually happened, but we're going to spin it that way and say that's exactly what happened, and Sterling was very detailed.
It just didn't come out correct,
no.
I think.
Just play that again, the second one. Let's hear it one more time. Everything happened.
Pitch is swung on and popped him up to shallow right. And the ball lands fair, foul, and it's caught.
Ah, okay. And I love Susan Wallman. You always hear her, his color commentator. She always is making groans underneath his calls. Now, that's important because then we had this one. That one there, not too bad. And look, I mess up calls too, so that's why we can poke fun at John Sterling, because I would make fun of myself. I blew a call this past weekend in one of the Citadel baseball games. I don't know what I was looking at. I thought one of the Citadel base runners, I think it was Dylan Costa. It was a play in the infield. I thought he beat it out. I called him safe. He was out at first. And when I saw the replay, he was clearly out. I don't know what I was looking at. I thought the ump called him safe. Like, I have no idea. I was on a bad acid trip for like one pitch of that game. And then I zeroed back in. I said, okay, hold on. No Doc Ellis around here. Let me get back into the action. I don't know. It was so odd. I thought he was safe. And then he was coming off the field, and I had my John Sterling. Oh, actually, he was out. And then I saw the replay. He was clearly out. So I don't know what I was looking at. So I say all that because now I can tease John Sterling for screwing up calls because, like, I screw up calls too, and I'll make fun of myself. We make mistakes. It happens. Problem is, for Sterling, it happens far too frequently, and they're bad mistakes, such as this one from – this was two nights ago in Toronto. Now, this is the this is a woman filming the video off her screen while playing the radio in the background. So you'll even hear her laugh as the play unfolds. But here's how things went the other night in Toronto where Sterling – got really confused about one play for the Yankees.
Pitch, 1-2. Swung on, hit the air to right. Back goes Stanton on the track, at the wall, leaping, and she is gone. It is a home run. They're all waiting. And why are they waiting?
Because Stanton caught the ball.
Oh, coming off the field is Chapman. Stanton never threw the ball back in. No, Stanton just robbed Chapman of a home run. Wow. What a play by Stanton.
Yeah, what a play. You missed it. Now, there are three things there that Sterling gets wrong. Obviously, most noticeable is that it was not a home run like he first called. Then his excuse, and look, I've been here before. It's radio. People theoretically can't see, so you try to cover your ass. Right? But, oh, Stanton never threw the ball back in. That's why I was confused. Actually, if you watch the video, as soon as he makes the catch, he throws it back in, and he does that underhand flip, you know, when you're feeling good after you make a nice play, and you just sling it in underhand. He does it right away. So now, in defense of John, my theory would be that he looks down in the scorebook. I assume he keeps a scorebook. Most broadcasters do. He sees the ball. He figures it's a home run. He's already looking down to put it down in his book, and that's when Stanton throws the ball back in. Because if not, then A, you missed the home run, and B, you also missed him throwing the baseball back in. And then C, the third thing he got wrong was that it wasn't going to be a robbed home run. That ball was going to be off the wall. It wasn't even a play above the fence. So we had three either lies or just inaccuracies. Three things he got incorrectly on the play. Not a home run. The ball was thrown in right away. And the third part is that it wouldn't have been a home run. It wouldn't have been a robbed play. Now, the best part is it's hard to hear in that audio, but you hear Susan try to be kind, his partner, and say, no, I think was the first thing. And then she says caught, like under her breath, as Sterling's going on about a home run. But then the best part is when she has to step up and correct him because he's so confused. And the way she says it with so much disdain, and usually she's great. She's very supportive of John. They've been doing it together for now 19 years. Sterling is now 84 years old. He still travels. He does all the games. He was there in person in Toronto. And they've been through this many times. So she always tries to be very kind and let him know without embarrassing him that actually you got that call wrong. Because I'm telling you, this happens far too frequently. But this one, it just went too far that she just had to come out and say it. And it sounded like she was so disappointed in her broadcast partner. Let's hear this one more time. Try to listen for first Susan early on saying under her breath, no, and then caught. And then the way she says it, Stan caught the ball. It sounds like she is like a disappointed mother. This was Sterling. Again, two nights ago.
Pitch, 1-2. Swung on, hit the air to right. Back goes Stanton on the track, at the wall, leaping, and she is gone. It is a home run. They're all waiting. And why are they waiting?
Because Stanton caught the ball.
Coming off the field is Chapman. Stanton never threw the ball back in. No, Stanton just robbed Chapman of a home run. Wow. What a play by Stanton.
Oh, I love that. It still makes me laugh. Because Stanton caught the ball. She was so disappointed. And I love how he says, wow, after he realizes. Wow, he caught it. Unbelievable. John Sterling. By the way, you want to know why it's so hard to get these gigs and become professional broadcasters? Because that is what they're putting out for the Yankees. We're not talking about like the small market like the Royals or the Reds, who are the worst team in baseball. The New York Yankees are having John Sterling botch calls like that on the reg. And then people say, like, how come the sports broadcasting is so competitive? How come you haven't been able to make it to the big leagues? Because this guy's doing it till he's 84, screwing up calls every night. That's why. That's why it's so hard. Now, I always say Sterling is a legend. I don't want to be too hard on the guy. He's 84 years old. He's still doing it. And he's been doing it for a long time.
And worth the criticism, though, Luke. I got to say, I can't bite my tongue. It's worth the criticism that one's here. Bad. What are we doing? And it's been going on for the last couple of years. And I don't listen to too much baseball radio, Luke. But, yeah, you know, come on. Come on. Let's move on. John, you did. Thank you for everything you did for the game of baseball. We appreciate you, sir. You called some great moments in your career, but it's time to go.
Yeah, I mean, if we're being real, you can't have these screw-ups. Especially when you're the New York Yankees. I mean, Vin Scully was more with it. He retired when he was 90. You still have the Brewers. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on his name from Major League. Another iconic broadcaster. He's like 88, and he's still doing the games. And he calls a tight game. He's not having the screw-ups. But Sterling, it's been going on for a good decade, maybe even longer, where he just screws up. So I don't know what he's looking at. Maybe he's looking down. He's not paying attention. I don't know. Look, I've been there. I've screwed up calls. But it happens far too frequently with Sterling. It happened a little bit. You always see these broadcasters slip as they get older. And eventually, I guess I'll be there too. Sounding crazy on the air. But it's what happened. It's why they kind of forced Marv Albert out, and he just turned 80. But these last 2 years were kind of tough on Marv, who is a legend. He is the GOAT of basketball broadcasters. But the last 2 years, he was calling the wrong teams, the wrong players. He was kind of confused what was going on. He would call his broadcast partner. He would work with Reggie Miller and Grant Hill, and he'd call them the other name. It was just embarrassing. And he's a legend, but it got to the point where TNT finally said, you know, it wasn't his decision. That wasn't Marv's decision. They kind of forced him out. So, like, all right, we got to go in another direction. This is you lost your fastball a little bit. And it happens to all of us. For Sterling, it happened a few years ago. And it's sad to see. Like, Marv, you're listening to Marv. He was a voice of the sport growing up, and then you're hearing him calling guys the wrong names, and it's like, oh, this is not the Marv Albert that we're used to.
It gets sad at some point.
Yes, it does.
Know? It gets sad. And I'm sure, you know, longtime Yankees fans that have listened to John Sterling for a long time, they just get more upset than anything else.
Yeah, it's like when you're at a family party and your grandfather or your great uncle is asking where somebody is that passed away 10 years ago.
Yeah, that ain't great.
And you're thinking like, oh, no.
Somebody's got to explain to him again.
Oh, no.
Who's going to do it?
And you feel bad. It is what it is. That's what's going on here. You're listening and thinking, oh, geez, Sterling. All right, anyways, coming up, we have to get to Trent's Takes. I want to make sure we have enough time for it, though. We may do that next. Also, a big win in hockey last night. We'll talk a little hockey. And a lot more to get to throughout the second half of the show. By the way, we have tickets to give away to the Charleston Battery coming up as well. Stay tuned for that. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You can always join the conversation. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can reach out to the show online. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734, or join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones because Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing, Mr. Luke?
I'm doing all right. What's up?
I think that blind sports should be a topic. I think it would be a great market for a worldwide tournament because Italy's got a blind sports baseball league, and also it's 90 bases, 90-foot bases. It would be umpire the whole nine yards. I think we can develop a team that would be baseball-oriented for, you know, baseball, and it could be a worldwide. Imagine that it could be competing against Italy, Spain, European theater, or whatever, you know. Have all these teams come into the Lowcountry area, and, you know, it would bring more prestige to the area when these teams have a good experience here. They bring word to the other parts of the world. And that would be a great experience to see not only a different sport, but I think it's probable and can make money.
And you want to have this like an Olympic event here in the Lowcountry. You think this is the best area, huh?
Right, at Raleigh Park. Have that there and maybe broadcast positions. But I think more people needs to bring more attention. Like Columbia's got a blind soccer league. They actually play, the ball actually makes a noise. And we used to have the beepers here where you had electronic ball. I know Miracle League might want to do something, but I'm talking big scale here because you're going to have lodgings, you know, could be set up for world teams to come into Charleston and stay over whatever, like a tournament weekend. And I think it will make money for the area and make everything more known. People know more about Charleston, and they could bring it worldwide, you know. So I think it will be a great deal, you know, have a blind beeper ball league. But it will be different this time because Italy's got a team that does the 90-foot bases. Yeah. They can, you know, do outfield, infield, you know, like the ball makes like a bell noise.
Yeah.
And it's not electronic.
Yeah.
They're very professional. These people can actually catch outfield, you know, fly balls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be a great experience for, you know, Charlestonians to come to these tournaments. Maybe other teams worldwide can want to travel the United States, you know, maybe have a big tournament, you know, countrywide to maybe play Italy or however maybe a soccer team does it, you know, when they have a worldwide, like American team plays Spain, Europe, or whatever.
Yeah, now you've mentioned Italy. You've mentioned Italy a couple of times. So if we were to have the events here, you telling me, is this the powerhouse? We got to worry Italy's the team to beat when it comes to
Italy. Italy's very good. You know, I've seen them on YouTube and all, and they are very good teams out there in Spain, too. So Spain and Italy is really competing in the blind sports industry. And I think Charleston and the United States really needs to think about experiencing blind people into sports because actually there's, you know, I think it'll be a great market for U.S., you know, be different too.
Yeah.
That blind people can play sports like soccer or, you know, I'm talking about younger set that more athletic and all that deal, but maybe right now use Charleston as a stone, a stepping stone, so that way they can, you know, practice about lodgings, get worldwide teams into the United States and Charleston and play tournament. You know, just start with Italy and then see how the market expands and see how people like it. You know,
What sport would we get you out there in? What sport would you play?
Not me. You know.
All right. You're just the idea guy.
I don't mind coaching.
Oh, okay.
I don't mind coaching now, but I would, you know, just I'm talking about younger. You know.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe you'd be like you could be like the guy in Benchwarmers. You know, where you pose as like a 16-year-old. We get out you. I get you out there, and you help out the baseball team. I've been to Beep Baseball is what they call it. It is really cool, and that's what Super Dave was mentioning there in that conversation, where the baseball, it beeps, so you can hear where it is. And it's really cool to see these athletes play that sport. And I knew somebody, when I was living in Florida, got to know somebody who was visually impaired who would play Beep Baseball, and it's really cool. And it's impressive to see them out there playing. Yeah, so I guess we'll have to work on getting the Paralympics here. I guess there's goalball is a sport that's part of that, that's played exclusively by athletes who are visually impaired. I'm not familiar with goalball, but that's a sport that's specifically for the blind athletes of the Paralympics. So we're going to have to work on getting that to Charleston. I'm all for it. Let's get it. Sure, bring some Italians over here, no doubt. And I guess they're the team to beat when it comes to baseball in this whole thing. I'll be happy to manage the club. Sorry. And we'll bring home the gold. So, absolutely, I'm all for it. And why not? Bring them to the Lowcountry. Good spot to be. Come on up. We'll wrap up hour two. There's all sorts of random things I wanted to touch on throughout the afternoon, including the NFL has released their international game schedule. Does it get you to a TV on a Sunday morning? The Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Hush not, child, and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Just move on up toward your destination.
Wrapping up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As I mentioned yesterday in the show, I was looking at some mock drafts for next year already, just because I'm just curious. It has nothing to do with the draft next year. For me, I always like looking at to see what these people believe, who they believe will be the biggest names in college football this year. Who do they think is going to step up and be a star? And so I was looking at this one mock draft from Warren Sharp, who's become one of the bigger names in football breakdown, I guess you would say, right? Breaking down the NFL. And he does it from a very analytical standpoint. But this mock draft was really surprising, and I would probably disagree. He has Spencer Rattler going fifth in the mock draft next year to the Giants. And that would be the third quarterback coming off the board. If Spencer Rattler turns himself into a top five quarterback next year, right, then book your tickets now if you're a Gamecock fan for New Year's or something. If he turns out to be the third best quarterback, at least in the draft class, I mean, that's big time for South Carolina, let alone the fact that, I mean, they would have a top five pick at the quarterback position. That'd be huge. I don't see it. I think Spencer Rattler could be a draft prospect, certainly, and could get drafted at some point. But a top five pick, that is high praise for the new Gamecock quarterback. Now, the breakdown, they also give a little blurb to explain why. And they say his sophomore year at Oklahoma did not go as expected. He was eventually benched. But his accuracy, arm strength, and athleticism still places him among the most talented draft-eligible quarterbacks. If his play returns to a consistent level, he'll remain in the first-round conversation. And the key stat they include is that he was seventh among Power 5 quarterbacks with a on-target rate of throws 15 yards or more down the field. So he was one of the more accurate quarterbacks down the field. In this mock draft, he had two South Carolina players go in the top 11. And I believe it was three Clemson players go in the first round. So over at Sharp Analytics, they really love the Palmetto State talent right now for next year's draft. I don't see Spencer Rattler going fifth overall a year from now, but we'll see. Hour three coming up next.